And I'm speaking with Lukewarm Lee Hansen, and you're the manager of, I don't know if I'm going to say the right chain or not. You're manager for a local movie theater in the area,
yes.
A big multiplex. And I, of course, know you from the club scene, from the early 90s, not to date us or anything. Right. You know, all these buildings have been bulldozed.
Everything's gone now.
Seriously, Adams is bulldozed, King's Head, Friar Tuck's. The only thing still standing is Outer Limits building, but, you know, that's definitely not a nightclub right now. I think it's actually a church. But
it is now. It is now.
Obviously we could talk forever about music, but today I was calling you, regarding pro wrestling. And I know you, of course, as Lukewarm Lee Hansen, your wrestling name, which I always thought was quite funny. But and I know that you have quite a collection of wrestling DVDs. I know that you're a wrestling fan. When did you get into pro wrestling? When did that start? What got you into it?
For me, back in the day, when I was a kid, when I was in my single-digit years, I used to watch Mid-Atlantic, which used to come on Channel 10 on Saturday nights at 7 o'clock, opposite Hee Haw and Lawrence Welk. So my three choices, that was definitely the show I wanted to watch. And I do remember seeing, Nature Boy Ric Flair back in the day, as well as, Roddy Piper. Well, Piper, I think, came a little bit later, but still, Ric Flair was a young champion at the time. And then for a while, I just kind of got out of it when I got older because I ended up moving to England for a few years, and they didn't have, wrestling on TV over there. So I didn't get to watch anything about that. And then for some reason, when I got back and I was hearing about, the Hulkamania and whatnot going on, I just really didn't get into the Vince's stuff at the time because I didn't particularly care for Hulk Hogan. But years later, I ended up just watching an episode of Primetime Wrestling. And I think this is before WrestleMania 8 happened. And I just started getting back in wrestling full steam again. You know, I was watching the Turner stuff during the 80s off and on, but I wasn't religiously following it, but I knew who everyone was. And from 91 on, I've just been constantly watching wrestling from there on. I've taken odd breaks here and there now, but I still follow stuff on the websites and whatnot. So I'm kind of kept in the know on what's going on. So.
Okay.
I attended a lot of local events. Sorry.
Okay. And do you prefer going to the live events or watching on television?
Live events are great. I haven't really been to only live event I was at. It was a house show that I got really good seats for. Well, it's two events actually. One was a pay-per-view, which my friend got. We got really good seats, and that was for the TNA show for Destination X when it was here a few years ago.
Yeah.
There was a house show back when Goldberg was in WWE. He was the current champion or current world champion, and they did a house show in that. And I thought that was great. There was a lot of good energy there, despite it being a house show. It was like a pretty packed house there for a house show. And I really like it when the characters kind of play out of character when house shows, because it's not a kayfabe, match going on. It's just a house show.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like the when you see the guys you really kind of despise, and they're actually some of the pretty funniest guys you've ever seen, in a live show. So. But I kind of dig the live thing a lot. I think it's an energy there, but you can't really get from watching it on TV. I mean, you can hear it and say, "Wow, he's going to really cool pop." But I think you're actually there, hearing, feeling that pop and hearing that pop and everything. It just is awesome. So.
What do you think of Destination X at Scope and the TNA pay per view? I mean, what were your thoughts on that event?
Some of the matches were great. I didn't particularly care for the fish market street fight because we were right there next to all the fish and all that stuff. But then they were hitting each other with it and flying.
Uh-huh.
And not that I'm allergic to touching fish, but I'm allergic to eating it. And I just didn't want anything to hit me in the face or while it was going on. So I thought that was weird. And I thought from where we were sitting, we'd get the Ultimate X match that was going on. Between James Storm and Rhino, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's great when you have great camera vantage points to see what's going on top, but from where you're sitting, you really can't see anything. So that was kind of a letdown. But when I saw the actual thing on DVD, I was like, oh, it looks pretty good. But again, from where I was at, I was kind of like, eh.
I was going to say, I was at that event also, and for that, the Destination X match where they were just, or whatever it was called, where they were just climbing up there, it was, I could see it and actually have some decent pictures of it, but it was kind of a combination of letdown and scary. I've never been a big fan of scaffold matches anyway, because,
yeah.
I mean, you know, unless somebody's completely suicidal, there isn't any real leeway to, really be athletic with it, you know.
Yeah. Even though you're like you've worked out and stuff like that, you have the same chances of getting injured as anyone who doesn't work out and does that kind of thing and is, has physically prepared supposedly for that match.
Yeah.
I mean, watching like old like the Starcade stuff when they had the scaffolding match for the Night of the Skywalkers or whatever it was called. And,
yeah. Ask Cornette about it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I mean, he's actually been involved with pretty much all those back in the day.
Well, he broke his ankle in one.
The theory of how it played on paper sounded great, but despite who you had up there, you really didn't have a bunch of guys who were really thrilled about being up there at all. I mean, I don't think that was an act when you see them up there and they're like they're on their knees for most of the time because no one wants to slip up and accidentally get knocked over, especially by the Road Warriors. I mean, this is as stiff as you've heard of a lot of interviews from other wrestlers, is where you just could not want to get hit by them by accident, head first over the scaffolding, which is why a lot of them ended up like hanging over the side and then dropping, and then you're like, eh.
Right. So. Yeah, I mean, it's the same theory of you can jump out of a second floor window, but, hang with your knees and then kind of roll with it. Don't just, tumble. Who are your favorite wrestlers of all time?
Well, it was weird because in the day, I liked, despite him being, I guess he was more heelish than tweenish back in the day, but like Ric Flair, I mean, he was a guy you loved to hate when he was in his full heel mode. When he did his tween face mode, because I never thought he was ever a baby face. I mean, I know he's done it, but I've never actually watched him when he's, was a full-on like baby face. To me, the Nature Boy is real cocky, son of a gun. And to me, he's either going to be the kind of guy you're like, well, he's my partner, but at the same time, I really don't trust him because judging from his past, he's going to be bad. But for some reason, I always tend to gravitate towards the bad guys on or heels as it was back in the day, because it's just that there were people you really wanted to get behind as far as them wanting them to lose. And it didn't matter who it was that did it. You didn't care if it was some jobber that went there. Even though back in the day, I didn't know the difference between jobbers and what. I just see a wrestler and I said, oh, he wrestles well. And I hope he beats him. And then, of course, he doesn't. You never hear from the guy again. So.
Right.
Or talent enhancement, as they call it these days. So.
Uh-huh.
But there were a lot of great performers that I really dug. I always was a fan of Ricky Steamboat. I was a fan of Randy Savage, and I'm not just saying that because of the recent passing, but Savage was probably the only guy I actually liked when I didn't care for the wrestling back in the, and then Piper, back in the the World Wrestling Federation days,
right,
in the 80s. But Hulkamania was just enough to keep me away, but I didn't watch it regularly. I think I watched like Saturday Night Main Events and the MTV Brawl for it all, or whatever it was called. And but other than that, I just went in because of Hulk Hogan, and I just wasn't a fan of his. And then when he went to WCW, I was kind of like, oh, great, here we go again. It's going to be Hulkamania all over again. He's doing the same stuff. But when he turned heel back in 96, I said that was probably the best thing that happened in his career at the time. So, because that product was getting stale for him doing that.
Absolutely. Now, obviously you're in the movie business or industry, and what do you think of the movie The Wrestler?
Oh, the Mickey Rourke movie.
Yeah, not
I liked it a lot. I mean, I know there's a lot of wrestlers out there who kind of, I think Hogan was one of them too, who really kind of, thought it was misrepresenting the business and whatnot. But I looked at it as, it wasn't so much representing their business in a way, because they're in the big leagues and stuff like that, where they get things like, well, for the most part, I could be wrong, where they get things like some sort of benefits or whatever into it. But when you get a guy who's either up and coming or he's on his way down, as JR always like to say, paying their dues, even though they're on the way out or they're still doing the thing, but they're not as big as they used to be, they're still kind of paying dues in a way because they're still struggling to maintain what kind of status they once had. And I, you know, there was a lot of mixed feelings about the movie when I saw it. It was like, you know, I felt bad for the guy, but at the same time I felt, I thought the character was pathetic, but not in a criticism of the character. I just figured that this guy really had nothing else going for him. You know, he didn't have like a college degree to back on. He's working as in the butcher shop of a grocery store when he wasn't wrestling. And, you know, and he had the fans that were appreciative of it, but then you had, like, people who just made fun of him because they thought he was a broken down, you know, wrestler. But the whole idea is, I think, stuff that's been stated with a lot of wrestlers in the past was they said, like, it's not so much what you do or what you don't do anymore as if you still have a heart for the business. And that's always kind of, like, an important thing. I think what it was is his character of Ram Robertson. But was Robertson or Richardson? I can never get his name.
Robinson.
Ram. Robinson, okay.
Yeah.
And he had the heart to still be a wrestler because that's all he did. But
right.
Because that's all he did, that's what he wanted to do.
Right. So. Well, I mean, it's a rough business to get into. It's a rough business even when you're quote unquote at the top. You know, it's a rough business all the way around. You really have to want to do it. You know. And you know, actually one wrestler put it to me best. He said it was like a horror film for him. You know,
it was like a war film.
Yeah. Horror film. Scary.
Oh, horror film. Yeah.
Yeah. Now do you have any favorite wrestling, DVDs?
I had a few of the tapes and then I jumped on the DVDs and kind of replaced those. Some of the WWE products that came out, I thought they did a pretty good job with. I kind of like the Ric Flair stuff they did. I thought they did a good job putting out. I like some of the seeing the old wrestlers, story DVDs, like Dusty Rhodes and Roddy Piper and whatnot. I think some of those are pretty well put together. And I know that's a taboo subject. I thought the Chris Benoit story was a great one, too. But, you know, of course, a few years later, you know, that took a different turn as far as his life was concerned or his career.
Mm-hmm.
But as a whole, I mean, it's not like I have pay-per-views that are, like, my favorite. I either like some matches in a pay-per-view, but I don't think in years I've had a thing where I watch a pay-per-view and it was awesome from the very start to the very finish. I mean, you always have some letdown matches.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, the whole Austin Genesis thing, you know, with him showing up and leading to the big match with Bret Hart in WrestleMania 13 was great.
Mm-hmm.
I like the whole evolution. I like the way they evolved some of the characters, I think, in Vince's product as compared to what they had in WCW, because you already had established guys like Sting and Ric Flair. Even though Flair, at the time he came back, I mean, he was in WWF, World Wrestling Federation for a short time. But you had a lot of guys that established you didn't need to have any, not say you didn't need to, but they just didn't bother the need to try to develop new characters. You just had a lot of talent enhancement that worked those shows because you already had all your established characters. But Vince at the time was always trying to tool around and try to make other either established characters different or take, you know, characters that had potential in other companies and wasn't utilized, like Steve Austin.
Mm-hmm.
And even though this whole basically like saying, well, here's your trunks and your boots, just do something with it, whatever. And, you know, him taking, you know, them giving him the reins to basically form his own character, I thought was really nice on the creative part, or Vince's part, or whoever was basically told him to do that. The same thing with The Rock and whatnot, because, I mean, when Rocky Maivia came out, I mean, even back in the day when I first saw him, I was kind of like saying, you know, to use one of his words, who's this jabroni type thing, you know, and then when he became into his own as The Rock and being the cocky member of the Nation of Domination and, of course, just being his own people's champ and whatnot. Again, I just like WCW really didn't do anything like that, I think, with their product like that. I mean, they did the Goldberg thing, but Goldberg was, and everyone, even though people say, oh, it's just an answer to Steve Austin, and I said, no, I think what it was they answered to the whole upcoming UFC stuff. Because the way he was dressed and what he wore and everything, and how he was always, like, you know, doing the air fight and all the time. And I was like saying, I said, he's bald and he's got a beard like Austin, but that's where the similarities. And, right. You know, I understand what they tried to do with it. For some reason, I liked Goldberg, but not for, like, obviously not for skill. Even though there were some things he pulled out of his hat once in a while that I was kind of surprised he did. But you know, him being a former football player, I was like, you know, he's just there just to be the bull, basically. And just strong arm everybody and
right.
beat them quickly and whatnot. But he did pull a few tricks out of his hat, which made me feel that, well, if they would utilize more of that stuff, and not worry about him spearing people and jackhammering people all the time. It'd be great, you know, have him do submissions, to win victories as opposed to him just jackhammering people himself.
Well, I mean, the spear and the jackhammer, you know, were usually over at that time. And I'm a big Goldberg fan, so I don't have any problem with those moves. But with him, he was kind of like the modern Ultimate Warrior, or if you want to go back even further, it's kind of like the Bugs Bunny cartoon. He was the Crusher. It's like he was there to wrestle for a minute and a half, and you know, it's kind of like the old joke about Junkyard Dog, where Bill Watts says, "Hey, you know, I want you on the show, but I don't want you to wrestle more than 6 minutes." You know, it's like everybody loves you. You go out, you do your thing, people love you, but you know, it's kind of like a limited appeal, and we don't want to overuse you, and we don't want to expose you. And I think that was kind of the case with Goldberg, because he was kind of green.
Well, he was very green. I mean, I know he went to the power plant and everything, but he just came like straight out of the Falcons,
uh-huh.
you know, and then went to the power plant. And I think was running at Orndorff, I think.
Right.
And trained him. And like I said, he was very physically intimidating. He was very, I mean, when I seen the guy live, I was like, oh my God, this dude is huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're all huge, but this dude was bigger than I expected him because of TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, my God, this guy's a monster. And again, I mean, I think because, you know, but see, I think what it is, the attitude they had, even as the years went by for Goldberg and then him going to WWE later, was they still continued to look at him as he was green, as opposed to, like, they would, I mean, yeah, I know they tried to do these storylines in him with where Jericho was taunting him, and they had to do this thing where he injured, you know, Goldberg on the set of his highlight reel or whatever. But still, it was like, you know, other than Triple H, well, yeah, I know he beat Triple H, but he kind of avenged his loss later. But because, you know, God knows back then you couldn't let Paul Levesque stay lost, or, you know, you'd have that belt back. So.
Well, but that brings me up to a couple of points, actually. One is that, you know, you'd mentioned, of course, the Benoit tragedy, and obviously there was a lot of drugs at his house. Do you feel, I mean, because you kind of grew up in the same time frame I did, where a lot of people didn't have the chiseled look or the bulging biceps. Actually, they were the exception rather than the rule.
They were just husky people for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's nothing defined about them for the most part. They were all just guys that they were big guys. If you didn't want to mess with them, it didn't mean you didn't want to mess with them because they were like had huge muscles. They just were big and intimidating guys. So.
Well, the story that was told a lot by the announcers and was kind of shown through in the wrestling was that a lot of those guys, as muscular as they were, they couldn't compete because they didn't have the technical skill. And that seems to be lost now. Like now, pretty much, that's what's respected. Not to say that, you know, there are people that are smaller that haven't gone forward, but do you feel that they need to maintain those physiques and that they need to, you know, do steroids and things of that nature to entertain you, or do you think that's just unneeded, unhealthy, added risk?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, as far as the drugs, I know most of it is usually performance enhancement drugs like steroids and whatnot. But it's like anything in entertainment, you notice that everyone apparently does some sort of enhancements of some sort, whether it's drugs or plastic surgery or whatever. And I'm not saying that the wrestlers do plastic surgery, but I'm just saying, but as Vince always likes to call it, they're entertainers, not wrestlers, or they're sports entertainers. So I just look at them as being the same as other entertainers, like actors and musicians and whatnot. And I know musicians kind of do this stuff, but I'm talking about like the one you actually, I mean, you don't necessarily see the musicians that you hear about doing these things. You always hear about the actresses or actors that are doing this stuff. Well, the same thing with the wrestlers, and especially when one of them dies.
Mm-hmm.
And they get put under the microscope by all these news shows and whatnot, especially, I don't think I mentioned her, but Nancy Grace. The Benoit thing happened. I was really disgusted by it because, you know, she was all like, well, Vince went on and did the show knowing full well. No, he didn't know. If he knew, he wouldn't have aired it. That's why he apologized on the ECW show at the beginning, you know, of a taped show. They cut in and put it into live face, you know.
Right.
Here, really started going out. We didn't get all the full details. But they took it as like, oh, they took advantage of it. I said, no, they thought it was a suicide. They thought that
they canceled a live house. I mean, it was a lose-lose situation either way, I think, for Vince, especially when the facts came out. Now, you know, as you said, they call it entertainment. You know, Vince said it pointedly and beyond the mat, it's like, no, we're not sports. We're you know, like a live-action movie.
Yeah.
And with that being stated, what can wrestling do to compete with other forms of entertainment?
Say what now? I'm sorry.
What can wrestling do to compete with other forms of entertainment?
Well, I know they try to do a lot of skits, which I do think takes away from the wrestling, because on some websites they actually have people who time how much wrestling is on an actual show.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say, and this is scary, but for a show like Raw, which is like 2+ hours, they say they average about maybe like 35 minutes of wrestling
right.
on a show that was over 2 hours. And you figure like, well, I know they're padding it with vignettes for upcoming pay-per-views or feuds or whatever. Some of those vignettes are actually well done. I got to hand it to the production team for those stuff. When they did the whole thing between Cena and R-Truth recently with the leading up the Capitol Pleasure, I thought those were well done stuff. And I love how they developed his character. But again, as funny as that is, in my opinion, I don't think that carries a show, because I think ultimately what people want to see is people wrestle. Now, I know that these guys do their wrestling and they can get hurt and get sidelined and whatnot. And I know they're afraid of that. They're not afraid to wrestle, but they're afraid that they might get hurt, because
right.
it doesn't. It's just that, you know, but that's kind of the job you signed up for. It's just like when we hear people griping about, like, you know, they're in the military and they're like, yeah, well, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do that. I said, well, nobody wants to go to war, but that's what you're trained for. You know, that's what you've been, you know, training for all these, you know, few years or whatever. There is a possibility you might have to go out there and fight. No one said they want you to fight, but that's the idea of having a military or whatever, so you could have people to protect you and people that are trained for it and shouldn't have to gripe about it. So, like, wrestlers just sit there and go, they hate being sidelined or they hate being hurt, but that just comes with the job. I mean, if you do your job well, then the risk, you know, obviously, and then it depends on who you're in the ring with, so you don't want to work with someone who's green. Mm-hmm. But as I said, it's just I don't know. I'm not saying they're afraid of getting hurt. They're not cowards, but I just, you know,
no,
I think
I,
the idea is they're not on TV, you're not getting paid, so.
Well, I understand. I guess the thing is that I think the people with the stopwatches and stuff that do that, I think that they're, you know, I think that A, they're kind of spoiled by what wrestling was in the past.
Mm-hmm.
B, I think that they're slightly unrealistic because, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know if you've ever been to a Tides game.
Yeah. I haven't been to one in a long time, but yeah.
Now, there is 9 innings worth of baseball. You know, there's, you know, 27 outs per team. But if you're not into baseball, there's a whole lot of other crap that goes on every single game.
Yeah.
You know, there's the sound effects and the goofy movie clips on the big scoreboard. There's the mascot running around. There's, you know, different contests. Basically, there is no dead air. There is no sitting back and enjoying an evening at the ballpark, because it's
right.
inundated with the other stuff. And I think that, you know, that's what's occurred with wrestling. I mean, because, you know, when I watch Raw is the only show I watch live, and, you know, a lot of times Melissa will be downstairs and she's amused by some of the other stuff and, you know, annoyed by the other stuff. She's not really, she's more of a captive wrestling fan versus an active
right.
Wrestling fan. But what I'm saying is I bet there are a lot of other captive wrestling fans that become active wrestling fans because of that other stuff. I could be wrong.
Well, I think the younger generations that are coming up, because I don't want to sit there and cite all the crap that people say is wrong with kids these days. But, you know, with your whole ADD generation, you to sit there and have somebody sit through, say, like a 30-minute match with Ric Flair, and have like, somebody young doing that, I think the young person would get bored if they don't know, understand the psychology of wrestling and how stories are told. So I think, like, when they do these things, like these goofy skits and whatever, or they have these, like, promos where they talk because they like hearing the guy's voice or whatever, I think that gets their attention a little bit more than just saying two guys wrestling around. And I'm saying that's fine and dandy, you know, for them. But just like, again, as you said, if some people are spoiled by the way wrestling used to be. I mean, I have classics, WWE classics on cable. Mm-hmm. And I watch like old Mid-Atlantic stuff. Even though that show is 48 minutes with the commercials taken out of it, it's pretty much mostly wrestling. I mean, the guys come in there and they speak their mind for a couple seconds and they're either getting in the ring or they just got out of the ring and they're getting on the mic for a second and then taking off.
Mm-hmm.
And but to me, but to have that, the fact that they would have more wrestling on a show with that kind of budget, well, again, it has to be for no lack of imagination, but to have that show with pretty much a very low budget to do all that stuff because they had to fill that time with wrestling because they didn't have a creative team back there. I mean, you had bookers, but you didn't have a creative team who said, we're going to write these skits and whatnot, or we're just going to say, hey, Briscoe, you're going to have a feud with Piper over your Mid-Atlantic belt. And they'll, you know, work. They'll tell the story as opposed to have somebody tell them, you know, what to say or whatnot, you know. And I think what it is today, to be honest, I've been lying the whole time, but to say, the whole entertainer thing, it seems to be a lot more true, though, when they say they're entertainers, because you've got these guys who do end up getting tapped to do guest shots on TV shows, or they end up being in movies. Granted, I know some of these movies are actually WWE film movies, but still, these guys get tapped to do odd movies and stuff. I mean, and somebody has had a successful career. I mean, say what you will about Dwayne Johnson and all the kiddie movies he's done, he's still made money off a lot of these movies. And, and you know, and he's actually getting back and doing action films again.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, the Rock has been successful. You know, Piper was successful. You know, guys like Hard Boiled Haggerty and stuff back in the day were able to put together careers being actors. But
Nathan Jones in Australia, he's sick doing all these like Thai kung fu movies all the time.
Oh yeah, he's actually
his movie Thai Bowl or something just came out. So.
I mean, he's been a lot more successful, actually, I think, in that than he was in wrestling.
He was the wrestler, yeah.
He's
in this country.
Yeah, he was in The Protector with Tony Jaa and a couple other movies. He was actually in Condemned.
With Steve Austin.
But I've
enjoyed his movies, by the way, too. I mean, I know the direct-to-video, but some of his movies have actually been entertaining. I thought they'd be really, like, bad, like the Seagal direct-to-video movies, but Austin's got some, like it says, he's got some quality about it that makes him enjoyable to watch, even though the rest of the actors are pretty much, you know, for the most part. I mean, Damage had Walton Goggins in it, and what's her name from Super, who played Supergirl in Smallville, she was in V, Vandervoort, well, whatever.
I wouldn't know.
But they had actually an actor, but some of these other movies are kind of like, you're like, well, there's nobody else in this movie I'm familiar with, but, you know, I'm just here to see Steve Austin, so.
Yeah, I've as part of this project, I've watched an awful lot of mostly bad movies with wrestlers in them. You know, it seems like, unfortunately, they tend to pick the wrong roles, or that's what's offered to them, or however it goes. Definitely avoid Endgame with Kurt Angle. It's horrible.
Is he a bad guy in that movie?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I heard of it. Is that guy the one that got Batista in it, or is that
that's
movie?
The Wrong Side of Town with RVD and Batista. Also, Viscera is in it, and then it's got a few rappers. I mean, you know, it's just not
Big
that.
Big Daddy Bean.
I do want to thank you for taking some time out of your afternoon to talk about pro wrestling.
You got me drunk after the match. I told you secrets over sausage and mash. I spilled the beans. Now I have to kill you. Two's company and three's a crowd. Think what you like, but don't say it out loud. Don't spill the beans, don't say it out loud, or I'll have to kill you. Easy, easy, Gorgeous George. Feather boa, velvet gown. There's a rumor going round, and every masked man needs a mouth. Bomber Pat Roach set on the coach. We'll bring bloody mayhem when we hit the big time at Wolverhampton Civic Hall. Easy, easy, Gorgeous George. Easy, easy, lovely George. Gorgeous George, the lisping birder of the Mecca. You got me drunk after the match. I told you secrets over bangers and mash. But now the cat is in the bag, and the bag's in the river. Brian Glover, Burlett Baxter, Nancy Boy on a double decker, shuts his eyes and dreams that heaven is a Midlands Shangri-La. Gorgeous George got a ninja to avenge all bully teacher. Gorgeous George, mincing mauler of the top rank. Count Bartelli is unmasked. The Zebra Kid is unmasked. The Red Scorpion is unmasked. Gorgeous George didn't need a mask. So take the weight off your feet. Have a kip in the back of the transit. When you awake, the lights of Wolverhampton will shine before your eyes. Easy, easy, Gorgeous George. Easy, easy, lovely George. Gorgeous George, mincing mauler of the Mecca.
Put this, but she's not called Virginia, is she? She's called Elizabeth.
I am well aware of that, but she is, I trust you will agree, a virgin.
Yeah, as far as I know. I mean, I'm sure she is, but do we really want to name a country after that fact?
Well, why not?
Well, it seems a bit rude.
Rude? How so rude?
Well, you know, to other nations, bringing up the fact that our Queen's never done it seems a bit personal. They might not want to know.
Okay, well, maybe I'll have a think about it. Hang on, remind me, who's the captain?
You are.
And whose boat is it?
Your boat.
Yeah, and who is it that decides what we call the, you know?
You do.
Do I?
Yes.
Do I really?
Yes.
Welcome to Virginia.